Okay, and welcome back. We're going to spend some time this hour looking at history, hopefully in a way that many of you haven't considered before, and we're going to try to open some doors for you to go through and look around and see what you see. John Friend is my guest this hour. He has an essay on Rents.com, and it is elsewhere, of course, on his blog, and it's entitled, Was Hitler a Zionist Stooge? Now, that's been one of the most recent Zionist PR smears of history, not just of Hitler, but of history, trying to paint the man out to have been a Zionist lackey, a flunky, financed this and that. I mean, it goes on and on. You know the drill. But a very good article, this is indeed, and you can get to it under John Friend's name simply by clicking on the data there, and it says The Truth About Hitler. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jeff. Thank you very much for having me on tonight. I think this is a very important subject that is very misinterpreted, even by people in the alternative media, or perhaps especially by people in the alternative media.
Well, there's that for sure. And yeah. I guess in a way we're stepping into the milieu of revisionist history. But to me, revisionist history is wonderful in many cases. History has been so corrupted by the winners that you've got to go back and try and find the data and bring history into accord, history as we're being taught it, into accord with the facts. And this article is lengthy, it's well-researched, and it is very, very interesting. Let's talk about the two sides of the Adolf Hitler coin as they're commonly perceived by people, even in the so-called alternative community.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we basically have this version, this mainstream version of Hitler as the embodiment of evil, right? I mean, he was allegedly, or he's presented to us as this evil figure that wanted to take over the world, and he wanted to kill all the Jews and all this other nonsense,
right?
Which we know by now is basically all made up. It's not true at all. But we also have this alternative view of Hitler, where he was actually working for the Zionists to get Israel established in the Middle
East. Yeah.
Right. And well, I mean, people even go so far as to say that Hitler may have been Jewish himself. He may have had, you know, connections to the Rothschilds and some of these other conspiracy theories that you find online. And I mean, there's a variety of these sort of conspiracy industry,
right,
conspiracy theories about Hitler. Some people claim that he was actually a British agent.
Oh, yeah. It gets crazy all the time. The British Zionist press can't go a week without dredging up some evil Nazi story or another and banner headlining it, at least on section two. It gets to be really ridiculous. For anyone who has attempted to study World War II and has not studied the work, and I have it on my site, it's all over the net, but not prominently. You got to look for it. There's a gentleman named Rabbi Michael Dov Wiesmandl. Now, Rabbi Wiesmandl in 1942 was watching the Jews of Europe basically being sold out by their own kind, but they were being rounded up and put in work camps, labor camps, and dispossessed, their property was taken, just outrageous. He went to the German government and worked a deal. And the deal was, if he could come up with 3 million U.S. cash, this is 1942, all the Jews in captivity or who were being incarcerated would be given free passage into Spain for simply 3 million cash. Well, Wiesmandl went to Switzerland, to World Zionist headquarters, figuring that he'd have a cakewalk getting 3 million to get all of his people, their people, allegedly, out of Europe. Hitler didn't want them in Europe. He wanted them out of Europe. Wiesmandl went and talked to the Zionists, and they said, I'm paraphrasing here, I wasn't there, but basically, and Rabbi Wiesmandl wrote a book called 10 Questions to the Zionists in 1947, in which he underscored all this. They told him, go home, Rabbi, you're not getting a dime. We want a lot of Jews to die in the war so we can more easily establish Israel after the war. So Wiesmandl went home and had to watch all this horror befall the Jews of Europe. Now, that's a whole nother story, but that's a fact. That's not hearsay. It's not rumor. This is a fact. read Rabbi Wiesmandl, Wiessmandl, read his 10 questions to the Zionists. He never forgave them. He probably died enraged, but that was the game. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point, and I have read information along those lines in the past, and I think ultimately what these top, you know, Jewish bankers and these Zionists that wanted to establish Israel, I think what they ultimately needed was some sort of an excuse to get the Jews of Europe and you know, the Jews of the world, really, to go to Palestine and to settle there and to establish the state, which many of them, most of them, in fact, didn't want to do. I mean, the Jews were, well, a lot of them were actually quite comfortable in Europe.
Correct.
Were quite successful. I mean, even in Germany itself, you know, there's a huge problem of assimilation. And many of the top Zionists and many of the top rabbis saw this as a threat to the very existence of the Jewish people. So yeah, I think there is something to that. Although I think they've really taken it overboard and totally manufactured this Holocaust narrative to justify the very existence of Israel, and, you know, to sort of, they sort of use it as a psychological assault.
Well, it's worked. I mean, look, it was when I started doing this kind of work and broadcast journalism, people were actually afraid to speak the word Jew. They winced.
Yeah,
Oh, exactly. My God, I'm not supposed to talk about them. Those poor people. I don't even talk about them. Jew. You can say Catholic. You can say Protestant. You can say Hindu, Buddhist, anything else. You can't say Jew. Well, now people can say the word Jew, and they're openly talking about Zionism. And this is crucial. I've tried always to differentiate between the two, a pious, religious, spiritually moral effort to embrace a religion has nothing to do with Zionism.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's funny, you know, you're right. You know, a lot of people are really afraid to talk about Jews and Zionism and even being critical of Israel, just because so many people equate the United States with Israel, or they, for some reason, they think that we need to give all our money to Israel and make sure that they get everything they want, which is totally ridiculous. And I think, you know, as they get more and more brazen with this, more and more people are starting to wake up and ask questions and say, hey, you know, why, for instance, can the Prime Minister of Israel come and speak at the United States Congress and receive, what, 50 standing ovations?
I think it was 39.
I mean, 39,
something,
sorry.
Like that. Whatever.
It
was an obscenity.
Even one or two is treason. I mean, why are our representatives worshiping and groveling at the feet of a foreign leader?
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I think they've really shot themselves in the foot with their brazenness. I think 9/11 was a huge event that's been exposed as basically being not necessarily an inside job, but it was definitely carried out by Israel using her agents that control the United States government, in particular the Bush administration. I mean, it's incredible. You look at the Bush administration, and almost every single individual, especially in the Pentagon, had dual citizenship with Israel.
Yeah.
Now, why is this acceptable? Why do people act like this is okay?
Well,
and people are just asking these basic questions, and I think they are starting to question, whoa, yeah, okay, this isn't right.
Read the story. Read about Rabbi Dov Zakheim, the comptroller of the money for the Pentagon. The day before 9/11, the announcement was made that $2.3 trillion, I believe, was missing. And of course, whatever it was that hit the Pentagon hit and killed the auditing team that was beginning to look into that and all the data. Never heard another word about it. What a strange coincidence. So this is all true. And then
right.
they have played the victim card so deftly for so long, and they're still getting away with it. Now, granted, not on the scale perhaps that once was, but when you own the media, you own Hollywood, you own TV and TV movies, and you get little minds and young minds and minds that really don't function very well anymore, it's a cakewalk to program these people into giving Israel whatever it wants. That's been the way it's been played. Now, that is beginning to change, fortunately. And when people understand that 95% of Palestine has been literally stolen from these people, and the genocide is an institutional behavior of this apartheid racist state, this Zionist state of Israel, they're beginning to become a little short-fused when it comes to giving them hundreds of billions more.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's incredible because if you look at the lies concerning World War II and this alleged Jewish Holocaust and the lies about Adolf Hitler, and then you look at the lies concerning 9/11, they really do form the basic paradigm of our entire political and historic understanding of the world we live in, at least by and large.
Yeah, very well said. All right, I have to take a break on that note.
Okay.
We're talking to John Friend, who has his own weekly talk radio program as well. This is an excellent article. I hope you'll read it and give it some real serious thought. Pass it around. Was Hitler a Zionist stooge? On John Friend's blog, and you can get there by clicking on it right under his name. Be right back. Okay, and we're back talking to John Friend about Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler, the most evil man who ever walked the planet. He had to have his horns clipped on top of his head every day. This is what they would have us believe. No, he was a human being. He had visions, he had dreams, he had goals. He was a hero in World War I. He has been vilified, of course, by the very people who caused World War I and World War II to happen, and God knows how many other wars. If you look at Michael Rivero's incredible piece in the center section at Rents.com, it's about a 35-minute video. I really hope you'll take a look at it. It's right there. And if you just scroll down below the Japan boxes, you'll find it there about four below the radiation box. How Zionist central banks rule the world. All wars are bank wars. The Central Bank Beast. Look at that video. Go ahead, John, please.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly what Hitler was sort of standing up to, right? I mean, he was basically standing up to this idea of the New World Order that, you know, we hear floated around all the time. You know, he was diametrically opposed to this idea. You know, I in fact, he totally eliminated usury and totally reinvigorated the German economy by getting rid of these parasitical bankers, and was really trying to rectify all the wrongs that were placed on Germany after World War I.
The Treaty of Versailles, the most inhuman set of reparations ever imposed on another nation by the alleged victors, ever. Guaranteeing World War II, guaranteed it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they were not only, you know, forced to take the blame for World War I and forced to make all these reparation payments, which included not only, you know, money, monetary, you know, sending money to France and England and whatnot. They were actually sending goods, lumber, coal, industrial goods. So they really got the shaft in World War I, and Adolf Hitler clearly recognized this, and he recognized that the traitors in Germany that agreed to this were largely in the Zionist or Jewish camp. They were largely Marxists. And they were trying to basically destroy Germany. And his goal was to reinvigorate the German nation and the German people and to reestablish Germany as a world power, which had been, you know, basically destroyed after World War I.
And the reason World War I was fought was because the British were basically being left behind. German industrialism, I mean, you know, rule Britannia, Britannia rules the seas, fine. But when you're talking about industrial capacity, output, genius in science and engineering and development, research, and all the rest of it, the Germans were way ahead, way ahead.
Well, and I think that was always one of the biggest reasons why they were historically targeted by the international bankers. I mean, we saw the international bankers target Russia. They had been trying to subvert and take over Russia mm-hmm. ever since the Tsar basically denied them a central bank.
Correct.
And it was largely the same thing with Germany. So that's really what.
Who are the most recent people to stand up to the Zionist world order? Not the new world order, the Zionist world order.
Exactly. Well,
and when what happened to them? Saddam Hussein?
Saddam Hussein.
Murdered. Muammar Gaddafi. Murdered. Hugo Chavez. Murdered. You stand up to them, you die. It's real simple.
Ahmadinejad has really said some important things. And
yes.
Look how he's demonized. I mean, yeah, that's basically what it is. Anybody that does not fall in line and, you know, basically whore themselves for these international bankers and their control of the media, anybody that does not fall in line is going to be demonized. Whether it's, you know, Adolf Hitler being demonized as this, you know, evil man who wanted to take over the world and murder all the
and
Jews.
And no one talks about Joseph Stalin, who killed at least 50 or 60 million people. No one
exactly.
talks about it.
Well, the reason why is because the United States, including the government and the media and many, you know, many aspects of the academic institutions in the United States, were actually covertly taken over by Soviet agents all the way back in the 1930s.
Exactly right.
Dave Martin, DC Dave Martin, has written a lot about this, and this is a subject that I've been exploring a lot more lately.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're growing up in school, you always hear about, you know, the Red Scare and the threat of communism and whatnot. Yeah. And then, you know, McCarthy is
demonized. Joe McCarthy knew what he was talking about.
He did. He absolutely did know exactly what he's talking about. And look how he's been demonized in our school system.
That's right.
in our media. This idea that Hitler was a Zionist stooge is basically projecting everything that the West was onto Hitler. I mean, it's just totally nonsensical. If anybody was a Zionist stooge, it was Churchill and it
Roosevelt.
Was Roosevelt. Yeah, Roosevelt in particular, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I think that Roosevelt himself may have been a communist agent.
If I had to bet, I would bet with you on that. I would bet with you. I mean, look at the people he surrounded himself with. Harry Hopkins, there are just so many. Bernard Baruch, one of the most powerful, wealthy Zionist Jews of the last century, maybe the most, was on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange when it crashed. What a coincidence, 1929. And with him was his little flunky, Winnie Churchill. He owned Churchill. He bailed him out twice when he had frittered away his money and was on the bottom of the barrel. Bernard Baruch owned Churchill. And I think your point about FDR is very good. I know Dave Martin. He's a friend. He contributes weekly to Rents.com. He gets it. He talks about the murder of James Forrestal, another Zionist victim, ultimately. It's amazing.
Yeah. It is. It is amazing. And what D.C. Dave has pointed out in a lot of his articles is that what we really saw was after World War II, World War II was basically all about destroying the last remaining obstacle to this idea of a new world order or
let's call it like it is.
Right.
A Zionist world order. That's the truth. That's what it is.
That is true. So yeah, we saw Germany destroyed to pave the way for this, and then we saw the systematic liquidation of any sort of opposition to this in the United States, in the United Kingdom, in other countries in the West. Guys like Forrestal were murdered. McCarthy was demonized and slandered, and all these other patriots were either demonized or persecuted or even murdered. So I mean, it's just incredible how our history has been distorted.
Right.
And like I said, it really does form our basic historical and political paradigm of understanding the very world we live in, and that's why it's important to talk about these things.
Yeah, of misunderstanding the very world we live in. That's their game. Back in just a minute with John Friend. Don't go away. talking to John Friend about the last century and the greatest villain that never was, Adolf Hitler. If you wonder about the 6 million figure, I would encourage you to go to my homepage or do a search, but you'll probably find more on Rents.com, and just type in 6 million and see what comes up. Let me read just some of the stories that come up, the titles. The 6 million figure began over 100 years ago. Ilya Ehrenberg, the man who invented the 6 million. The elusive 6 million. Two Zionist trial runs of the 6 million story before World War II. And it goes on and on. Now, let me just read a little bit from an article here, which I think you'll find very helpful. Dr. Frederick Tobin wrote it. He said, most people think that the figure 6 million emerged during World War II when it was claimed that Germany killed many Jews in the Holocaust. But the magic 6 million figure dates back to 1900. Here, a distinguished educator and historical investigator from Australia shows how this number first appeared in its current mystical configuration. And let me just read some of these off. This, again, by Dr. Frederick Tobin. May 7, 1920, Jewish war sufferers in Central and Eastern Europe, where 6 million face horrifying conditions of famine, disease, and death. It's May 7, 1920. May 5, 1920, to save 6 million men and women in Eastern Europe from extermination by hunger and disease. Another quote from another news source. May 5, also 1920. 6 million starving, fever-stricken sufferers in war-torn Europe appeal to us. May 3, 1920. Your help is needed to save the lives of 6 million people in Eastern and Central Europe. May 2, 1920. 6 million human beings without food and shelter, clothing, or medical treatment. And it goes on. It goes on back further and further and further. let's see. Here's another one. June 14th, 1915. In the world today, there are about 13 million Jews, of whom more than 6 million are in the heart of the war zone. Jews whose lives are at stake and who today are subjected to every man. It's all there, folks, but no one looks. So we try and tell you. And the figure was reintroduced in 1944 by Ilya Ehrenberg, Stalin's rabid anti-German hate maniac. So again, this is long time stuff.
And Jeff, what's so funny is that there's never been produced any official German document, or there's never been any, you know, recorded testimony or any sort of written program to systematically murder the Jews of Europe, as is alleged in this Holocaust fairy tale we're told. However, guys like Ilya Ehrenberg, who you were just mentioning, openly called for the genocide of the German people. He was encouraging the Red Army to rape,
kill
and
them
murder.
All. Yeah, rape, I kill mean, them all. Yep.
So I mean, it's incredible. We have literally the exact opposite of what happened in World War II.
It's classic psi projection. You project onto your enemy your behaviors. It's common, and people just don't get it. They make an outrageous claim, and it puts the other person on the defensive, or the other government, or the other people. The Germans were liquidated not just during World War II, but from 1945 to 1953, anywhere from 6 to 8 million more were liquidated. Those were almost always Germans who had national pride and believed firmly in their heritage and their accomplishments in history. So they were wiped out. Germany has been on its knees. Zionism, you got to remember, folks, Zionism, as it came to be called in the 1880s, begat Marxism, begat Bolshevism, begat communist socialism, okay? It all stems from the same tumor. It's all there.
And you'll notice that all of those ideologies were basically financed by the international Jewish bankers. So what we really have communism on one hand and capitalism on the other, and they ultimately are two sides of the same Talmudic coin, and they basically produce the same results no matter where they're practiced. and that is the total destruction of the nation that they're practicing, with the Jews and the Zionists controlling all of the wealth and all the power of the nation and the state.
Try and do some research and find out what Germany was like after World War I and who was in control and the percentages of control. You can't find it anymore. The Weimar Republic, you can't find that data. It's been pretty much expunged from easy access on the internet because it told the same old story. It's abject control and total domination. Now, who suffers the most here? Who basically suffers the most are people of the Jewish faith who are caught up in this Zionist, it's a non-religious movement. It is nothing to do with, they hide behind the mask of Judaism. Okay? It's completely secular. And so the Jews, the pious Jews, good Jews, and there are lots of them out there, they're the ones who suffer. They're the ones who are the victims, often sacrificed by their own type. And this is what happened in World War II, as I told you earlier with the Rabbi Michael Dov Wiesmandl story, and that's a true story. Look it up. They were sacrificed in full intent and full malice aforethought by the Zionists who run back then the international financial machine that literally patronized and then propagandized and then literally financially backed both sides in the war. I mean, they backed the whole thing was a Zionist operation. We're talking about 9/11 back and interposed with the paradigm of a world war, one, then two. It's the same operation tactics each time. They vary, but basically it comes out of the same box.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, getting the Gentiles to fight the enemies of these international bankers, the people that are actually standing up to this global tyrannical system. And I mean, that's what we've seen throughout history. I really see the 20th century as basically the Talmudic triumph over Western civilization. And then, you know, with 9/11 in the early, you know, the early part of this century, what we're seeing now shaping up is the Talmudic attack on the traditional Islamic societies of the world.
Exactly. Well said, John. Excellent. All right. Hold on, and we'll come right back with more and John Friend in just a couple of minutes. Talking to John Friend, and again, I would point you to the center column in Rents.com, our featured story section. Please scroll down below the two Japan boxes and look for How Zionist Central Banks Rule the World. All wars are bank wars, the central bank beast. In that video, you'll see how the Rothschild central banksters were behind and involved with the American Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Civil War. Absolutely amazing what they did. World War I, World War II, fast forward to Iraq, to Afghanistan, to Libya, and now the recolonization of Africa. The war in Mali, Niger, we've got troops in Niger. This is all about greed, bankster, and suppression. It's total control. These people are amazing. What was the first thing that the so-called rebels, you got Syria going on now too, that's another Zionist operation. The Zionist rebels which moved into eastern Libya and took Benghazi, what was the first announcement they made, folks? You know, some of you remember. The first announcement was, the new Libyan central bank is open for business.
Now, isn't that it just absolutely incredible?
Yep.
I mean, it's so revealing. It just shows you exactly what And see, this is what they do. They're basically using all these proxy armies to destroy the last remaining, I don't even know, threat isn't even the right word. I mean, I guess the last remaining challenge.
Last vestiges. There's not much left. It's a Zionist world, folks. The communist Chinese are playing ball with them, but they're not, to my knowledge, subjugated yet. Although, give the Zionists a chance and they'll bend their arm. I'm told that they're crawling all over Shanghai making deals, and these are Israelis for the most part. But they, anyway, go ahead.
No, yeah, that's a good point. That certainly wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they've, like I said previously, they basically subverted and destroyed Western civilization, and I mean they're using America right now, what's remaining of America, you know, the last remaining financial and human capital that we have, to basically destroy Israel's enemies in the Middle East. And these happen to be the nations that are actually, I don't even know if resisting is the right word, but I mean, they're basically just trying to do their own thing and live their own lives outside of this globalist, Zionist, you know, totally destructive, tyrannical system that the West finds itself in. And I think that's ultimately what their goal is. They really want to totally stamp out any sort of opposition to their agenda. And that's really what this destruction of Hitler and this demonization of Hitler is all about, because Hitler thoroughly understood, you know, he totally understood what the game plan was. He knew who the players were. He knew who the criminals were, and he openly talked about them. He openly exposed them, and was a very brave and honorable man. And that is the one thing that they cannot deal with. They cannot have anybody who is serious and dedicated and honorable and honest standing up to them, because they know people will listen and people will start to get it, as they did in Germany, as Muammar Gaddafi was doing. I mean, Gaddafi was up there saying, and quite truthfully, that the Mossad was behind the JFK assassination.
Yeah.
And I mean, he made a number of other statements that were quite damaging.
He was truly a remarkable and heroic figure. And what he's talking about when he says, for those of you who don't know about the JFK murder, was JFK knew that the state of Israel was going after the atomic bomb and then the thermonuclear bomb. He told Ben-Gurion, I'm not going to allow it. We're going to insist on international open inspections of Dimona. And Ben-Gurion said, oh, no, you're not. And Kennedy said, oh, yes, we are. And that was pretty much what I think was the end. There were a lot of reasons that could have been, but this was the primary that caused JFK's death. The state wanted that bomb.
I think you're right. I think it was certainly one of the primary reasons behind his assassination. I mean, obviously, if anybody that's really interested in this should research it, but JFK had a whole, you know, array of interests aligned against him, the military industrial type people, the military itself, you know, all sorts of interests.
There were half a dozen reasons that easily could have led to his murder.
But one that's never talked about is this Israeli connection, and Gaddafi certainly knew about it and talked about it, and that's why. Well, I'm not saying that's why he was taken out, but it just goes to show you that anybody that stands up and actually cares about their people,
right,
and is trying to.
Saddam Hussein had taken Iraq and made it the most westernized, advanced, enlightened country in the entire Middle East. I saw a documentary on that when Desert Shield began, not Desert Storm, and that documentary ran on CNN, and I've told this story before, one time, and it was basically an honest look at modern Iraq and what Hussein had done. Who is this man Hussein? And it was so amazingly salutary and complimentary to what he had done, his vision. Same thing with Gaddafi. He wanted to start his own currency. His people benefited more from the natural resources of that country than any people in the history of, well, in the history of recorded time. From the natural resources of Libya, he gave to those people unbelievable benefits, and that has all gone now. It's all gone, all of it.
Well, this idea of being concerned primarily with your people and with your nation is something that is totally, you know, heretical to these Zionist bankers. They want everybody, you know, in this globalist system where nationality and even race and, you know, these things don't matter. We're all the same people or whatever. And I mean, this is exactly what they're against. They're against any sort of nationalism, any sort of leader or political movement that puts their country right. and their people's interests first and foremost. They are the ones that are attacked and demonized and ultimately, you know, invaded and destroyed. Yeah, exactly.
Well, look at Venezuela. Yeah, come on, Hugo Chavez, gone. Now, the Zionists are putting everything they have, so is the CIA, because it's pretty well run by the same interests, against Maduro. They want him out. Their boy in Venezuela is Capriles Radonsky. Now, Radonsky is... He claims to be an avowed Catholic, but he comes from straight Jewish lineage, so this is not unusual. And that is what's happening in Venezuela. There are the world's largest known reserves of petroleum in Venezuela, up to 5 trillion barrels. The Saudis only have 600 billion, so figure it out. So this is the big game right now. The April 4th, I think it is, elections in Venezuela. Watch carefully. Maduro will do his best, but Cabrillas... Radonsky has international Zionism pushing him all the way. So watch and see.
Yeah, well, my thoughts and prayers are with the people of Venezuela and their great leader, Hugo Chavez. You know, let me also say God bless Adolf Hitler and Gaddafi and all these other great leaders that have stood up to these international bankers and their totally tyrannical and destructive agenda of world domination, which we're basically seeing come into fruition. But I mean, we're still resisting, and I know you're probably not going to go down without a fight, and I'm certainly not. So, you know, there are still people out there resisting these forces, and you know, I think we're making progress. I think more and more people are waking up to what's going on and to the forces that are pulling the strings, you know, behind the scenes, so to speak.
Right. Well, so, they are. They are waking up. They understand, but denied their vote, denied access to the media, denied a fair shake at a financial lifestyle anymore. Look, this is, people talk about these FEMA camps. We're in a camp already here. It's called camp usury. That's my term.
Absolutely.
Everybody's in debt, and they're not going to get out. This is how the game is played. You don't need to put people in camps. Their lifestyle becomes their literal a set of chains. And
well, what they've done with their control of the media and their control of history through the educational system, they've basically created this big entire psychological prison that we all find ourselves in until we discover the truth about the Holocaust and 9/11 and JFK's assassination and some of these other major events. We will never break out of this psychological prison. And I think your show and in the work I'm doing and the work many other people are doing is really, you know, giving people
Well, we're trying to give those who have an open mind and who want to know the opportunity to entertain, explore, and consider other alternatives. And if anything
Absolutely.
You've heard in this hour is offensive to you, all I can do is suggest that we still have a First Amendment, and I would challenge any of you to do the research. If you do the research, I think you're going to be, I know you're going to be shocked at what you find. History is written by the winners. And the fact of the matter is we are captives of an international moneyed elite which has a heritage that goes back maybe 2,000 years. It's nothing new, and the plans have been made a long time ago. I'm just still amazed at the rapidity with which they have sprung the trap in the last 15 years. It's amazing.
You know, it is amazing. And like I said, I think there are more and more people waking up and recognizing that, you know, clearly what's going on is not only not right, it's immoral, it's unacceptable, it's totally contrary to who we are as a nation and as a people. So, yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. Like you said, if anybody has an open mind and actually does look into this stuff, they'll clearly come to the conclusions that we have. And if anybody has any problems with what I'm saying or what I'm putting out on my website, feel free to contact me. I'm very open and honest about this stuff. So I got nothing to hide. And, you know, I think we do need to be open and honest about this stuff, and we need to be unafraid to speak our mind and to challenge these big lies of history.
We have to. It took me a long time to get where I have been for a long time, but I did it honestly, and the amount of information when I started was minuscule to what's out there now, so it is really easy to find the data, folks, if you want to look for it. And I've certainly put a lot of it on my site. John is doing a great job, young man, doing what he believes in, and that encompasses the First Amendment and an honest look at history and the facts, not the fairy tales and fictions that are put in our textbooks and the school curricula. John, tell people where they can find you and hear your program.
Everything that if anybody wants to get in touch with me or check out my work, just go to john-friend.net. And you can find everything, all the information about my radio shows and all my blog posts.
Very
and
good.
Feel free to drop me an email. I'm also on Facebook, if anybody's on Facebook as well.
Very good. John, thank you for your courage, and thanks for being here tonight. It's a real pleasure to meet you, and we'll talk again.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Jeff. Have a good one.
Okay, good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
John Friend, and his paper is, Was Hitler a Zionist Stooge? ? Very well written and worth your time. Okay, we'll be back with Hour 3 in just a few minutes.